Waheguru Ji Ka Khalsa,
Waheguru Ji Ki Fateh,
and good morning, good afternoon, and good evening, depending on what time zone you're in and where you're listening from. So this is now our fourth podcast, and this week we're going to be talking about becoming parents and all of the experiences around that. Just before we start on this week, I just want to talk about our last few podcasts and the response that we've had from you guys, especially the one last week when we spoke about marriage struggles and we spoke about the realities that we've been through. And you guys, it really resonated with you guys because the feedback that we had was amazing. It was overwhelming. We wasn't expecting that, to be honest with you, because we wasn't even sure ourselves when we were doing it. And it just kind of happened, really. It was quite natural. And the conversations that you guys have been having together as couples about things like communication is really amazing. And it's something that's really touched us.
You see, I think the one thing that I really want to say is, like, I feel like speaking to some of the Benjis who have contacted me after listening to last week's podcast was that they're embracing learning from our mistakes. So, you know, like, you know, there's this kind of saying, you know, you learn from your mistakes. Absolutely, you do learn from your mistakes, but we should also be willing to learn from other people's mistakes. So if we're saying to people, this is what went wrong with us, this is what we weren't doing, and this caused this to happen, I'm really glad that people are kind of taking a, you know, a preempting anything possibly going down that way for them. And, you know, like, a few people have said to me, my Singh never talks like this, but now he's saying, let's go on a date every month, which is amazing to hear. And just let's talk to each other about, you know, each other and our goals and what we want and what we, because, you know, the danger of becoming all about your children is that when your children grow up and go to university or get married, you're going to be looking at each other and not knowing who you are. So it's really important that, you know, we do try to, you know, spend time together and always ensure that we have a relationship which is separate from our children and other people around us, like in-laws. So immense amount of feedback when it came to people, you know, commending us on speaking about in-laws. And it's not that we want to, it's not that when we discussed that in the podcast, it wasn't that we wanted to slate anybody or we wanted to put anybody down, but it is a reality of our culture, isn't it? And, you know, to share people with people what we went through and how we got through it can make other people feel like that they're not alone when they're going through those struggles. And you know, there's a lot of emphasis that gets put on, you know, that, you know, the mother-in-law is always the bad person and, you know, things like that. But, you know, we also, as, you know, we have to also see where we can possibly help to resolve situations and make a situation better, especially if you're coming from like a Gursikh perspective as well.
Yeah. And the other thing is with that, we've spoken about our experience, but there's still quite a lot more that we didn't actually go into. Because we've found this ourselves just from doing these podcasts, even though they're an hour long, we've still got so much more that we don't actually talk about.
Yeah, a few times where we've been like, oh, we didn't mention that, and we didn't mention that, which is so key. But we've been asked by a few people to talk a little bit deeper into you know, kind of situations people have with their in-laws and, you know, kind of things and situations I've been exposed to when going around doing camps and speaking to other women. And we will revisit that at a later.
Yeah, because like I said, there's a lot more that we haven't actually covered, but that will be unraveling as we go along. And as you will know, with the topics, everything does overlap. So we will be going back to things and picking up where we left off with certain topics.
Yeah, but keep your feedback coming in, because without it, we're nothing. We need to know where we need to improve and what you want from us. Essentially, we're doing this for, you know, the listeners out there, for them, so they can, you know, like I said, learn from our mistakes, but at the same time, you know, where we are experiencing something, we want to share that so then other people can tell us, you know, or, you know, well, I've tried this and I've done this, and then, you know, it's helping us too in such a huge way. We can't even put it into words, really, can we?
It's a big reflection, because as you're going through, you're remembering these things. You said things to me even when we were actually doing the podcast, and I can't remember certain things. And so it's a good tool to be able to remember these things.
So today we're going to be talking about becoming parents, and we're going to be talking about all three of them, if we can fit it in the time.
Yeah, if we can fit it in. This is what we're all about. As you guys know, we're passionate about parenting. So we're taking it right back to the start where we became parents.
So let's get on with this week's episode. So as I said, we're going to be talking about becoming parents, and we got married in March 2008, and we found out we were pregnant quite quickly, didn't we?
Yeah, August 2008 we found out, or September was.
Yeah, I thought I had a kidney infection or some sort of infection, didn't I? Because I kept getting pains.
That's right.
But it was kind of like in my lower back area. So I kept on drinking all this cranberry juice. I remember I was working for a film company in Soho at the time, and I remember just buying loads of cranberry juice and trying to clear out, you know, someone said to me, clear out the infection. And it got to a point where it was quite painful. And then actually I remember one of the girls in the finance department, Karen, her name was, she said to me, "You might be pregnant." And I said, no, I'm not really pregnant. I've just got married. And then she was like, "Why don't you just get yourself down to the walk-in clinic?" So I went over to the Soho walk-in clinic, which is right next to 20th Century Fox. I can never forget that. And then I messaged you and I said, "Come and meet me."
And I met you there, yeah.
Yeah, and then we went in, we waited for about an hour and a half, and then we went in, and it was a really nice nurse. And she said, "I'm just going to do a pregnancy test. And I said, "No, it's just a kidney infection or a urine infection." And she said, "I'm just going to do one anyway." And then she said, "You're pregnant."
I remember we were so shocked, and she was just looking at us, and she was like, "Well, that's what happens when you get married. You have a baby."
Yeah, she said, "Are you sad?" No, she said, is it bad news I've given you? And we were like, no.
We were shocked.
Yeah, we were so shocked. We were happy. I remember standing on the steps outside the Soho walk-in clinic, and we just hugged, didn't we?
Yeah.
And we were just like looking at each other like, "Oh my God, everything's going to change."
Absolutely. But at that point, we had no idea, really. It was just good news.
Yeah.
But we didn't really know what it meant to become parents.
Yeah. We just was not expecting that at all.
Yeah.
I remember we said, "Who's the first person we want to tell?" And it was my sister, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was, yeah.
So we met her somewhere, didn't we?
I think so, yeah.
We met her at Waterloo Station, I think.
I think so, yeah.
And then,
but I think we were also, because we'd heard from other people about, you know, the 13 weeks, so we did know something at that point.
Yeah.
That we kind of, you know, that's the kind of first point, like the first hurdle, wasn't it, getting to 13 weeks and getting a scan.
And I think with all my pregnancies, I've always been quite fearful of losing the child, because I watched my mum have quite a lot of miscarriages. And then also your mum had told me that she had lots of like children that she lost. So I was quite fearful of that. And we told your parents that night. And I remember one thing about telling them, because obviously we weren't really getting along. I really thought if I told them this, because I hadn't had any grandchildren, that it would make our relationship stronger. I thought, I don't know, it would like almost like buying them like bright, you know, this is.
You had an expectation.
Yeah, I did. Exactly. I had an expectation that, okay, now they're going to be like, yeah, you know, we love her. She's given us a grandchild. So we told them, and then the next day we told my parents. I remember my mum and dad, they were like jumping up and down, going crazy.
Yeah, I'm so happy.
Yeah. And the pregnancy was a really, really hard pregnancy, because obviously we're still living with the in-laws, which was a challenge, in this tiny little room. And then I was working. I got diagnosed with pubis dysfunction.
We found ourselves going to the early pregnancy unit quite a bit.
Yeah, I had a bleed
to start with. Yeah,
yeah, and then that was quite scary. And then we had, then we found out we got, I kept on getting a lot of pain.
Yeah.
And then we found out we had pubis cystis, symphysis dysfunction. Is that how you pronounce it?
Symphysis pubis, yeah.
Pubis, yeah. And which, for those who don't know that, what that is, it's the relaxing hormone that is released towards the end of your pregnancy. What that hormone does is it literally does what it says on the tin, says to relaxing. What it does is it makes the bones soft and the ligaments soft around the lower area, so around the uterus, like around all that area, so everything can open up to let the baby out. My body releases the hormone too quickly, and so what happens is it's extremely painful, because essentially, even though the baby's still inside, all the weight and everything is put on the pubic bone because it comes out of alignment. So that was extremely painful. I remember I didn't even want to get out of the car when we were choosing to buy the pram. Do you remember?
Yeah.
I just couldn't even get out of the car. And I was just, and I think that's why we had a really bad pram the first time round with Mensima, because I just literally was like, yep, that one will do. Because I just couldn't even handle it. It was like so much pain. But I still am thankful, because there's some women with that condition who have to go onto crutches. They're so bad.
Well, it came to was quite heightened when we was getting ready to go to a wedding.
Oh yeah.
Remember?
Yeah. A really good friend of mine, Kieran Barker, she was getting married, and we were getting ready.
I was getting ready upstairs, you was downstairs.
Yeah, I was already ready, because you always take ages to get ready.
Per usual, yeah. And then I heard this like big noise, like you'd fallen over, and then I went downstairs and I thought you were giving birth.
I know, I thought I was in labour or something. That's how much the pain was. We ended up in the...
So this is what, about 6 weeks before our due date?
Yeah, we ended up in the hospital, and then they literally were like, yeah, you're going to have to just deal with this.
It's given way, yeah.
Yeah, so the alignment that I was talking about of the pubic bone, that had come away really quite drastically, but I couldn't do anything about it. They gave me a belt, but that didn't do anything.
Yeah. So we got to the due date, and it's quite naive and innocent of us, because we got to the due date and we had a midwife appointment, and we went in there and we were like, yeah, today's the due date. And she was like, okay, yeah, you got to wait another 2 weeks. We're like, okay.
Yeah, I remember that. She gave me a sweep as well, but
yeah.
So we had to wait. We waited 9 days, and then we started I started having some twinges.
A little bit before that, wasn't it?
Yeah. About 2 days before, I started having twinges at home. So I was just bouncing on my ball, and mum and dad were visiting and come in. And
I was working from home.
Yeah. And then eventually it kind of, on the third day, started to intensify, and we went in. And I remember actually at home having a bath, and that really just brought on the contractions, the pain level. We went in, and probably the worst thing that happened out of that whole situation with Mensima was the midwife who checked us in said, you're going to have this baby by 10 o'clock tonight, or 10 o'clock in the morning.
Yeah. So we got in, it was probably what, 2 a.m. or something like that. Mm. She said, you'll be out of it in 6 hours at least. And we're like, yeah, because we didn't know had no other experience, right? We're like, okay, yeah, that's great.
Yeah, it was brilliant. And then I was just like, yep, no pain relief. I'm doing fine. If I could take this for another 6 hours, this is brilliant. But after 6 hours, we were still...
You wasn't moving at all.
I wasn't dilating. And so when we went in, we were 3 centimetres. And then I can't even remember the timings now, because we are talking about nearly 10 years ago. But we weren't moving along. And I remember there was a Gurmat camp happening, where all the Sings had got together, and we were at 5 centimeters, and then you sent a message to one of the Sings there. You don't even remember. I can see from your face you can't even remember this.
Oh, I can remember it.
Oh, you can?
Yeah, because you was struggling.
I was in so much pain.
Yeah, we didn't really know what to do.
I was in so much pain. I didn't want to take any pain relief. But then I just couldn't, the situation just was completely out of control, wasn't it, in that we couldn't know what was going to happen in terms of timing wise, why I wasn't dilating, what the problem was. And then you kind of obviously asked one of the Sings who was there, can you do a Das? Because, you know, Navroop's not dilating and like
she's in a lot of pain
and struggling. And the next time they checked me, I'd gone to 8 centimeters.
Yeah, we thought things were going in the right direction.
And then and then everybody was really happy with midwives. You know, we saw 3 changeovers, didn't we? Midwives.
Mm.
And so that's how long we were in the hospital. And every time they were like, yep, it's going to happen, it's going to happen. But the pain level was so bad at one point. And the reason why I want to really emphasize on this is because there's a kind of growing culture. And I've spoken to a few kind of professionals in this arena who have said that there's this kind of, there's something growing within women where they feel that they can't say that they struggled at birth. And like they have to, you know, tell the story that, you know, they handled it like a pro. And I think that it might be because they might feel that it makes them look weak, or especially as Gursik maybe. But I'm going to openly just say to you that I got to a point where the pain was so bad, I wasn't progressing. And I remember saying to the midwife, I can't do it.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
yeah, I remember that.
And all my births have been very silent. I don't really talk that much. I'm just breathing through it. I'm really quiet. But I remember with Mansima, I got to a point where I was like, I don't know how long I can do this. I can't do it anymore. And this Gordy, she was an English white lady who was my midwife. She grabbed my face. She put both her palms on both sides of my face and said, I don't know much about Sikhs, but what I do know is that Sikh women are very strong and they can do anything. So you got this, you can do this. And I just felt like that was like Vaigru just speaking to me then and there, because it was like, you know, she herself is saying that she doesn't know anything about Sikhi, but the one thing she does know is that. So yeah, she's looking at me. She's looking at me and thinking that I am one of these women. So I've got to basically have a bit of faith in myself and in Guru that I can get through it. At that point, she said to me, "We don't know how long we're going to be here. We would suggest that you have an epidural in case we go to an emergency, and then you don't need to have an anesthetic or anything like that. It'll all be already plugged in and done." And you didn't want me to have an epidural, did you?
No, because I knew that you didn't want to. But then with experience now, it's like you have these things where you want it to be a certain way, but you have to go with the flow and what's going on at the time. You have to just go with it.
Yeah.
You can't be like, you know,
I don't want to do this.
Exactly.
You can't be so regimented.
Exactly.
With it,
you can't. Know? But we didn't know that at the time because it was all new to us as well. Yeah. But now you know that.
Yeah,
you can't
but
be like
that. Like, it's crazy. Like, you know, first time round, how deluded you are, because, you know, we had our bag packed and we had, you know, our iPod. We had all this Geetan playing, and I remember Geeta the Prabhu Ki Gal Meri Rasana. That was the shabd that was playing over and over again, and you know that. You think that you're going to get through it, and you're going to be home. Like, you know, people are saying things to you, and so you're like, you know, for example, the midwife that said, "Oh, you're going to be out of here in six hours." Sorry, you know, it's like all these kinds of things are being said to you. So you're just so naive. You're going with the flow. You're thinking that this is what's going to happen, but then all of a sudden, you just find out that, you know, my temperature was rising, Mansimra Kaur's heart rate was not in a very positive state, and all of a sudden all these doctors and nurses are running in after 20 hours of laboring, and then you have to hear, you know, "We've got to take you down for an emergency C-section." My mum and dad, by the way, they were, and my sister, they were in the delivery sweet with me, cracking jokes and making me laugh, and, you know, kind of just keeping me going for all that time, which was really nice. But at that point, when they came in, and you know, my dad, I remember dad kind of going, why did you just let her go through 20 hours just to do an emergency C-section in the end? I just remember him saying that, and he said that for days afterwards, didn't he? Why did you have to endure that? And then, but you know, it was meant to be. But I don't know, how did you feel when they came in and said, you know, there's a problem here, we've got to do this?
Well, yeah, like you said, we'd been there so long, we were like just so drained, like we didn't know what was going to happen next. And then all of a sudden they were like, oh, you've got to have a C-section. And again, I didn't know that much about C-section then, and it seemed like the unknown, and it seemed like quite scary at the time because it seemed like something else that was going to happen now that we didn't know about and we didn't know what to expect or anything. And it was all such a hurry, but we knew something had to happen because your temperature was rising, and I could see that they
made me take my guard off. So before I got pregnant, I asked other Benjis what they do with their cagar. And this is just for anyone who doesn't know and wishes to remain unsung with their cagar, is that so we tied my cachera around my ankle, and that was solid. You tied that really, really solid so that didn't come off. And then my cara as normal, and my keski and everything, my kanga was in my kese, so that was all normal. And then I had a shorty little garban, which was on a smaller gatra, and that kind of sat underneath my armpit, so it didn't get in the way of anything. But they got to a point where they said, you know, need you to take everything off. Especially they said, you know, we need you to take your turban off because your temperature is really high and we need to cool you down, basically. So, I remember them doing that. But I think what kind of affected me more sicky wise was when they said they had to remove my hair where they were going to cut me to take where they were going to do the C-section. My sister was really distraught by that. They were like, we're going to have to remove the hair. Is that okay? My sister was like, no, you can't do that. It's against her religion. She was so sweet. She said that. And I was like, no, just do it. You know, do what you've got to do. So they're like, we're just going to do it where the incision's going to be. And one of the most memorable things about that really hustle and bustle of those moments was they were like, they pointed at you and said, are you going to be coming into theatre? And you said yes. And they said, right, you need to change your clothes into scrubs. And there was all these doctors and nurses and my mum and my dad and my sister all in that delivery suite, and they just chucked these scrubs at you, and literally you just stripped in front of everybody. And all I remember was Waheguru, like Guru Gobind Singh Ji, so amazing, giving us the kashera. You were like completely covered. All, you know, you were able to change in that moment and keep your modesty because of Guruji's kashera. I just thought that was so amazing.
I didn't know kashera as well then. Yeah. over my knees.
Yeah, it was just amazing because I was just like, because it was like, where were you going to change? Do you know what I mean?
I'd just done it as well because I did just like, let's go now. They were like all in a hurry to we got to go now. So
that was 11. That was 11 p.m. They said you have to have a C-section. And believe it or not, all of this, what we're talking to you about in the last, you know, 10 minutes or something, actually happened within the space of 16 minutes because she was born in 16 minutes later.
Yeah, it was 11:11 when we went in there. Yeah. It was on the board, wasn't it?
Yeah.
And 11:16 birth time.
Yeah. So they did so. And I remember because you weren't allowed in straight away, but I remember laying flat and just seeing probably about 15 people in this operating room just prepping just to get our Mansa Makor.
Yeah. And it was like it was so crazy because it'd been hours and hours, and then we were just there and it was like 5 minutes, like, because obviously that's what a C-section is, right? But we didn't know that at the time.
And when you came in and they started literally straight away after you came in, and you, I don't know if you remember, but you were literally like hot, because obviously I was laying down, but you were like cradling my head, and in my ear you were doing Rakhiya the Shabad.
Yeah.
And you were just like doing it over and over again. And then all of a sudden we just saw this like...
No, we heard this cry because we can't see anything. Yeah, yeah. On the other side, aren't we?
And then when Simra, she just arrived.
Yeah. Just heard the crying from the other side and then just see them picking up this big baby.
Yeah, she was big. She was... Yeah,
9 pound 2.
She was 9 pound 2.
Yeah.
And, yeah, so we found out afterwards the surgeon who delivered... and Simra, before they were wheeling me off to recovery, she said to me something which I didn't really resonate with me then, but then obviously when I got pregnant again, I really realized what this doctor was saying to me. But she very, very specifically came over to me to say, everything is absolutely fine. Your next child will definitely be able to be a natural. And I never really realized what she meant by that, but it was only when we got pregnant with Gridlene, and I had a natural birth with Gridlene, which I had to fight for because they wanted me to have another C-section, which is a big problem in this country. And this is why I'm so against when Tories come into power, because they cut everything in these kind of services at NHS. And so there's not enough beds, there's not enough staff, all these kinds of things. And it does have this rippling effect. And the rippling effect it has on the maternity services is that people just want to do C-sections to get people in and out. They can predict, okay, this person will be in on this day, they'll need a bed for this long. So so I had to really, really fight to have a natural birth.
Well, it's a case of, you know, you're overdue. You've had one before, so you must have one again.
Yeah, but I know what you're saying, but it's also like trying to cover themselves.
Oh yeah,
because if anything goes wrong,
absolutely,
with my original incision opening or something like that.
Yeah,
but you know, I think that the body, Guruji made the female body to do this, so we should be able to give our bodies a chance to do it. I know everybody's situation is different. But we should try to, if we physically can try, then we should be trying to have a natural birth. And I think that's really important. And I can tell you, my Mansimra's birth was completely and utterly intervention at every point, right? Gridlene was intervention to a certain point because they induced me. So I still had to have their chemicals or whatever to bring on these contractions. It was only with Gorbin Singh that Guruji gave me the opportunity to have like a completely 100% natural birth, that kind of progression. But I've had to learn that over time. But going back to my point about, you know, what this doctor was saying to me, I feel like when I reflect that at that point when they were taking me into recovery with Mansimra, she was saying to me, don't have another C-section. And it was after, obviously, we found out after when I asked the doctors, you know, or the midwives, why I wasn't progressing, and they said she was facing the sky, so she was back to back. So it was Kirpa, because if she had come out, she could have potentially broken her neck in the birth, coming down the birth canal.
But it's also what you're saying about these things and what you've had to fight for. At first, when you don't have the experience, you're looking at them because, you know, they're trained in it and they studied in it and everything. They have the experience. So what they say, you just take it, and because you don't know any better, right?
Mm.
And then when you actually go on your own journey and you do your own research and you have your own experiences, then you're able to say, hang on a minute, this is the situation. And then their approach and changes because they know that you know certain things, and it's your body and you've got certain rights, and that you're able to put more of it that way, and the emphasis begins to change.
Yeah, I understand. What was a point that really stood out to you, you know, and your, you know, in your mind, or, you know, kind of from finding out you were going to be a father to the point where she was here, Mansimra?
Well, you were quite good in kind of coaching me along the way to knowing what to expect, because obviously you'd had an active father who was very hands-on, and you wanted me to be like that from the start. Mm. So I knew what the expectations were, and I knew I'd have to learn a lot of things on the job, because like I said, I was just used to becoming a husband. Now all of a sudden I had to become a father really quickly.
Mm.
So I knew what was to come, but I was thinking too far ahead, as in, you know, the kind of things that you do with your children. I wasn't thinking that much about sacrificing my time and other things. That was all to come, really. But I knew that I had to learn things, and I was, you know, in expectation of that to come.
Mm.
And then obviously when Sima came, this was another thing that I wasn't expecting, because I thought obviously you would be handed her first, right? But because of the C-section, you weren't able to mm. take her. So mm. they gave me Mansima first.
Mm.
And I won't ever forget that moment, like just mm. holding her and, like, you know, because yeah. she'd just come out of you
yeah.
from the C-section. Like her eyes weren't even open. Her little eyelids were opening and
yeah.
and the little tongue and everything.
She was really swollen, wasn't she?
Yeah, yeah. I won't ever forget that moment, because that was something I wasn't expecting.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, when I think about kind of challenges that I had in becoming like a mother and all that, I kind of feel like the biggest challenge was I going to be good enough, and do I know how to do this, and what do I have to do? But I really honestly just feel like everything came really natural, and she was like such a chilled out baby, and everybody kept on saying to me, she's chilled out because you're chilled out. But in my mind, I was like, my mind was screaming, saying that I don't know what I'm doing here. But she was like just a really easy baby, I think.
She was, and that's just something I just remember now. There was one thing that I was concerned about, is holding her when she was born.
Oh, yeah.
Like if she was going to be too small.
Yeah, yeah.
And a newborn baby, I've never really held one before.
Yeah, I used to say that. Like,
so I was exactly, that's what I was concerned about. But because she was like a 3-month-old when she came out,
she was like a toddler.
It was like, yeah, there was no problem there, which was yeah. good. So that made me feel comfortable.
Yeah. Yeah, she was so sweet when she came. And then unfortunately, we had to stay in hospital for a while.
Yeah.
And then I got fluid in my lungs, and we had to stay in even longer.
Yeah.
So it was quite a stressful time. And then
it was coming out of hospital. So you got the old clear from the C-section and everything, and then going back into the hospital after, which was hard.
Yeah. Before we go into talking about what we did as soon as we left the hospital, I think it would be really, really nice if we just kind of talk about what happened with Gurleen. So Gurleen was really different for us, because we had been married 5 years, and like we mentioned in our last episode, we had gone through some challenges in our marriage, and we were building ourselves up again. And then we kind of felt like, well, you really wanted another child from Mansima, didn't you?
Yeah. I wanted that, because I'd grown up with siblings 7 and 8 years older than me, and I knew what it was like. So I was keen to not have a big age gap.
Yeah.
Between siblings.
And I was fighting you on it, because not because I didn't want one, but because I thought I couldn't have one because of my PCOS. So
yeah.
Because I've got the polycystic ovarian syndrome, I was thinking to myself, well, if I've not got pregnant in the last 5 years, then it's not 5 years, in the last 4 years, then it's not going to happen, because my PCOS is at a peak, and, you know, my hormones are not, you know, causing me to be infertile. So, you know, I don't know. The turnaround came when we kind of started sorting our differences out, started working on things. And then I really started researching what PCOS is, what that means for me as a woman, what that means for infertility. And then we just started trying, didn't we?
Yep.
And I was quite conscious about recording various information and my body what was happening with my body and things like that to kind of help me with that. And then at the same time, I was on a major health kick, so I had to change my lifestyle. I lost loads of weight. And I'm going to tell everybody my Levi's story.
Can I tell you? Go on then,
yeah. So before I got married, I had the most amazing Levi's that I got from New York. And I feel good in them. I felt like I look good in them. They're really comfortable. Absolutely loved them. After having them in Simmer, couldn't fit into them. So I decided, I had read somewhere that if you want to lose weight, then you should put something that you want to fit into, like somewhere in your bedroom where you can see it all the time. So I put these Levi's on the back of the bedroom door.
Yep, they were hung up.
Yep, and every day I used to look at those Levi's and be like, I'm going to fit into those Levi's. So I lost all this weight, I was doing all this exercise, cutting down my portion sizes. And the day I was like, I'm going to try my Levi's on today. Do you remember that morning?
Yeah.
And you were like, yeah, go on then.
I took a photo of you.
Yeah, yeah. Have you got that?
I've still got the photo.
That photo. I tried these Levi's on, guys, and they fit. And I felt so proud of myself that I finally got to my ideal weight. And then Gabrielle all of a sudden went, you know what? You haven't had a period for a while, have you? And I was like, oh, yeah. And he was like, why don't you do a pregnancy test? So I'm wearing my Levi's. I'm wearing my Levi's. I'm feeling really good. I go downstairs, I do a pregnancy test, and lo and behold, I was pregnant. And yes, everybody, I have not got back into those Levi's.
You still got them?
Yes.
Are you going to still keep them?
They're in the garage. I'm not throwing those away. Okay. I actually went into Levi's the other day and said, do you still do this number? And they were like, no. So I'm not throwing those Levi's away. But yeah, I haven't got back into those Levi's. But yeah, that was... that was a challenge, wasn't it? So it was really different because with Mansimra, it just happened. With Gridleen, we had to work for it, so to speak. We had to, I had to really change my lifestyle. I had to really look after myself and allow it to happen that way. So, yeah, and this time round, we were, all the things that I had learned from the first time round, I was really kind of putting that into practice. I was really looking after myself, massage. And that's where I met Natalie, my beautiful Natalie, who is the most amazing doula, you know, and she used to come every month and she used to give me a massage, a pregnancy massage, and she used to give me all this advice. I had a really amazing midwife as well. I remember her.
Yeah.
And she used to see me regularly throughout my pregnancy, and she used to guide me so much. And yeah, she it was amazing, but it was still a challenging pregnancy, but I guess not as much, was it? It wasn't like health wise.
First 3 months were
hard. I'm always really bad in the first 3 months. My sickness is just through the roof. But after that,
it wasn't that bad.
Yeah, and so it wasn't too bad with Gridleen, and then with Gorbin Singh, that was the biggest surprise. Which is, I had Gridleen, and then I just felt like my PCOS had peaked again, and that my hormones were all over the place. So I'm not going to get pregnant. And then all of a sudden, I found out I was pregnant, and I was just like, "Huh?" But actually, I was getting Ayurvedic help for my PCOS. But they said to me, just so you know, when we help women who have PCOS, they do get pregnant, because to help get rid of their PCOS or to control their PCOS, it does make you fertile. And I was like, yeah, but that's not going to happen to me.
Yeah.
And I got pregnant.
Which you didn't tell me about. You didn't tell me about them herbs.
Because I didn't think that the Ayurvedic herbs would have that much of an effect on me in that way, with fertility, but clearly it did. And then, and this time it was a little bit different because we were having different sex, but what didn't we? So we had a boy this time.
But again, with this one, we were off on half term with the kids and we were going out everywhere, and you was exhausted, and I was wondering, what's going on with you?
Yeah.
I was like, what's happening? And again, this is the last thing that we thought it would be, because you even bought a pregnancy test and we didn't use it for 2 or 3 days because it was not going to be that.
Yeah.
It was like the last thing.
Yeah. And I remember we were in Asda shopping, doing the grocery shop with the kids, and it was Halloween, wasn't it? And then I went down the aisle and I just thought, I'm just going to pick up a pregnancy test. I just picked it up. And you guys were still unloading the car, I needed to go to the toilet anyway, so I thought, I'm not going to lose the opportunity. So you guys were still unloading the car with Mansima, and Galeen was coming in, and I decided to do the pregnancy test, and you guys came in with all these bags, and I was just like, Vaiguru. And you were like, yeah. And I was like, you're never going to guess what. And you were just like, it's positive. And I was like, yes.
Yeah, I still can't. I won't forget that. Yeah. For a couple of days, I was just in shock.
Yeah.
I was in the most shock I've ever been in.
Yeah, you was in big time shock. And again, we FaceTimed my sister, first one we told. And it was
that. And but I won't forget this again. It was crazy because, like I said, you'd been feeling like low and down and feeling sick. All this
exercise.
Yeah, absolutely. But as soon as you found out, it was like your body just, it kind of knew that you were pregnant, and then you just had the worst pregnancy from that moment onwards.
Worst pregnancy out of all three of them.
Yeah.
I had sickness really bad first 3 or 4 months. Straight after that, I done my neck in.
Yeah.
Straight after that, I got the norovirus.
Yeah. You had a tooth problem as well.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Straight after that, toothache. Couldn't do anything for it. Couldn't even do an x-ray. Then I got the flu really bad.
Yeah.
Flu stayed for 2 months. Oh, my God. It was so bad.
Yeah. It was crazy.
But I still feel like in this pregnancy, I kind of looked after myself even more than the last one. So every single time I feel like I was taking a step further in looking after myself and learning from what had happened before. And that enabled me to, you know, like walking loads more, eating better, all these kinds of things. I think because, you know, as a Gursik mother, you want to try and do the best for your children from the get-go. So I knew that with Mansima, we weren't in Sangat that much. We were our Sangat was still growing. And so I didn't really know, okay, you know, I was doing like a little bit of extra part here and there, and we were going to a lot of Keithans, but I didn't know specifically what should you do, what shouldn't you do. So whatever I was doing, obviously that was what I was meant to do. I know with Godlin, I'd read elsewhere places that, you know, you should be doing Nithinem for your child. So you should be doing double Nithinem. You should be trying to do like Serge Bart. You should be trying to all these different things that you should be trying to do for the soul. And so with Gurleen, and because the pregnancy with Gurleen wasn't as bad, I was able to do a lot more, you know, kind of spiritual, you know, I was kind of
uplifting. Yeah.
You know, so I was like able to do a bit more Simran and more part and things like that. And then with Gorbin, because it was such a bad pregnancy, I feel like I kind of didn't do anything.
Yeah, and you said that.
And I had so much guilt around that.
You felt that, yeah, as you were going through.
I still have guilt around that. Like, you know, this is going to affect him, you know. It's going to have an effect. What you expose your child to always has an effect. And so I do feel that. And I sometimes do see differences in the children. And I do wonder, you know, has this got a correlation between what I exposed them to during the pregnancy?
The other thing is you can only do what you can do at the time. Like if you're like, you know, being sick and you can't get out of bed, what are you meant to do?
Yeah,
it's all well and good saying mother needs to do this and that, and in an ideal situation, yeah, you should do that. But if you can't physically, then what can you do?
Because I've always had this mindset. I've always had it from before I come into Sikhi, that if you listen to something, it doesn't have the same effect as if you are reciting something yourself, if you're saying it.
Yeah.
So I've never really been comfortable with just listening to Bart, even though obviously we have Bart on in the house and Keithan on and things like that. I still feel like the power of when I do it myself is just, I don't know, like tenfold. And then if I was to understand it, maybe one day in my life, then that would be even like, I don't know, 100-fold. But yeah, I guess I still have a lot of guilt around that. I'm assuming a lot of mothers do. So I don't know.
Yeah, again, it's like you said, the situation, everyone's situation is different. and it's how they manage it. But when you do feel able and well, because you know you have those times where you just sprout, isn't it, and you feel great. So yeah, nesting.
Yeah, exactly. So to all my sisters out there, if you are able to do your nithinem twice, so do one for yourself and one for the soul, it does have a huge effect. I've seen a huge difference when doing that. And also, if you don't know your nithinem, so one thing that was amazing is because I didn't know my job side, I didn't know like all my nithinem off by heart. After doing it double for when I was pregnant with Brudline, I knew it off by heart. So it was just amazing that she gave that to me.
Yeah.
You know, and I always think that she's done that.
And you're giving a message to your sisters. So I'll give a message to my brothers out there that you shouldn't be too hard on your wife and saying that, you know, you're carrying my child, you should be doing X, Y, and Z. Because like I said, your circumstances may not allow your wife to do that at the time. But in saying that, that doesn't stop us from doing extra as well.
Yeah.
So we shouldn't just lay at the door of the wife and say, you know, you're not doing this, so it's not getting done.
Yeah.
You should step up and do it as well.
Yeah. And also like I've heard like a lot from you know, so I know one Benji, she was living with her in-laws and up until 8 months, she was still making everyone's roti. And she was like, you know, serving everyone. Hannah thought she was even bleeding at 8 months.
God,
and having severe back pain. And I remember because she's contacted me and she said, I don't know what to do. And I said, you need to tell them that you need a rest. And she was like, but my mother-in-law and my sister-in-law keep saying, oh, no, the more you stand in your pregnancy, the better it's going to be when you give birth. And she was a first-time mum, and I was like, yeah, that's not right. You need to rest. And unfortunately, her Singh didn't have the confidence to stand up for her. And I would just like to say that in situations like that, if you unfortunately don't have the confidence to stand for your wife, then think about the child that she's growing and try and think of that child and that you want the best for that child. So there are really quite awful situations out there where some Bibian are going through a lot of hardships when they're, you know, in situations that are unavoidable. But I just really wanted to touch on that. So with Gudleen's birth, I'm going to go back a bit. And with Gudleen's birth, I was still 9 days over.
Yep.
They wouldn't let me go over anymore because I was a VBAC. Which is vaginal birth after C-section, cesarean. And so they booked me in and they broke my waters, tried to induce me, didn't happen. Then they gave me the drip, which brought, yeah. So that essentially what that does is that brings on fake
hormones.
They basically put fake hormones inside you and that brings on fake contractions. And that takes you like 0 to 60 really quick. And with me, what happened was I remember the midwife, she was from Zimbabwe, do you remember?
Yeah.
And she loved the Gita that we were playing, didn't she?
Yeah.
Do you remember? Guru, you just happened to have a spare CD of that.
Yeah, just in case, wasn't it?
Yeah, in case like the iPod didn't work or something like that. So he had a spare CD and she ended up taking that home because she loved it so much, which was amazing. Anyway, I digress. So she was saying to me, you are progressing very well. And I was just like, I'm in absolute agony here. And she was like, no, you're like really handling it. And I think it's, again, because I'm quite silent when I'm birthing, that can kind of maybe get taken as...
Oh, again, second time round, because obviously I've been witness, what, 3 times. So every time the midwives have been like, when they come and see you, they just have seen you in control of the situation. And you, because obviously the situation that you're in at the time and you're in the zone, you're not able to see that because you've said to me, oh, why are they going away?
Yeah.
Why are they?
Because when you're in labor, the midwife's meant to stay with you. But the midwives kept on leaving and going to get a coffee and this and that. And
they were attending other women that needed a little bit more than you maybe because you could hear them. whereas they thought you were, and they could see that you had myself there and your sister, two of us.
Yeah, my sister and Gurpreet Singh have always been my birthing partners. And the reason for that is because what Gurpreet can give me is kind of the kind of, he gives me the affection and reminding me to keep japing naam. And, he, you know, he's that little voice of Vaiguru in my ear, constantly kind of reminding me and things like that. Whereas my sister, she's like, okay, do you need a pillow fluffed? Or, you know, do you need to have a sip of water? Or she's the more kind of giving me that kind of support. So combined, you guys were an amazing birthing team. You and my doulas, basically, as an athlete.
Yeah, I couldn't have done it without her.
Yeah. So with Gurleen, she was like, yeah, you're progressing really well. I'm going to up the dosage quicker than I meant to. How do you feel about that? And I was like, yeah, okay. And you know, I think it was like 4 hours and she was out, right?
Yeah, it was about 9 something, and then she was born at 1:50, 1:55 in the morning. So, yeah, about that, yeah.
And with Gorbind, it was literally like no intervention.
Fast forward,
it was like no intervention. Like I felt like with Gurleen, like I just felt like I could feel like Vaiguru just with me, and when I was pushing, I just felt like there was something very profound happening to my body. But at the same time, I was like trying to make myself not embrace the pain. Like I was trying to control my mind to think that this pain is not negative, that this pain is positive. And I think that that's what really helped me with Gurleen. With Gorbind, I feel like that was like very similar, but it was like such a progression from Mansimha, where I was like completely not in control, i.e. had to have a C-section. Then Gurleen, where there was this intervention to bring in on my contractions. And then with Gorbind, it was like my waters broke by themselves. I was contracting like by myself naturally. No one was touching me. I was just birthing by myself. They didn't have no machines on me. They didn't touch me. Even like she was like, I'm not even going to check, you know, how much you're dilated. Just do what your body wants. I remember her saying that to me. And it was amazing. Like, and I just remember just feeling so connected to everything with Gorbind. It was really, and so the reason why I was saying at the beginning of the podcast about this kind of trend that's happening with women, Gursikh Bibiya, feeling like they can't say that, you know, they lost it for a moment or they were struggling at this moment. You know, I just feel like we have to be able to be honest with ourselves when sharing our stories, because then you can see the progression. So with Mansimha, I got to a point where I was like, I'm not going to be able to do this. With Gurleen, it was like, I can do this, but then I'm still getting help. And with Gorbind, it was like complete control. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And it was because I knew my body, I knew what I needed. And my sister and Gurpreet, they were both, you guys were both saying like, we don't even feel like
we didn't do anything third time around.
Yeah.
Well, one, because it was so fast, and two, because you just was totally in control of it and you were in the zone. And because we were so used to like such long labors the first two times, the third time we just felt like we didn't do anything because we were so used to being there for you all the way through the other two, that now we felt we didn't really do a lot because...
Yeah, that's what I guess I'm like one of, I know I've met women like this before who just say they just don't like pregnancy, but they love birthing. And I'm one of those. I love to give, if I could have a birth like Gorbind every time, then I would just love to do it all over again.
Steady on.
Yeah. I think Gurpreet Singh's just about recovered from my birthing again joke.
Recovering, that was not rehearsed.
So I think that's a good time to bring this episode to an end.
I would agree with you.
Yeah. And just so everybody knows, we've tried our best to, in 1 hour, to share with you our three birthing stories. Clearly, we've not gone into too much detail with all of them, but we'll be touching upon that.
We'll be overlapping on that, yeah. So if you guys have got your own birthing stories, then please do get in touch with us and let us know, and your thoughts on becoming parents before the experience and then after as well. So please do share that with us. And obviously, we'd love you guys to keep on subscribing to the podcast and leaving your comments and giving your 5-star ratings as you have been so far. So please carry on with that.
Yeah, we really appreciate your reviews. And moving forwards, we're going to be having some guests on the show.
Yep, looking forward to that.
Wonderful.
From all over the world.
Yeah, we've got lots of amazing people who have agreed to come on the show and share their expertise in parenting, marriage, all different areas.
All walks of life, yeah.
Yeah, mental health, everything, and supporting us further. So we really appreciate you listening, guys. Take care of yourselves. And thank you.
Why good you got cards? Why good you got there?